Today's presenting sponsor is SimpliSafe Home Security. Are you feeling particularly anxious?
Mm-hmm.
Unsettled?
Yeah.
One small thing you can do right now to at least provide a sense of safety when you're at home is to get SimpliSafe Home Security. Traditional security systems respond after someone breaks in. SimpliSafe is different because it can stop crimes before they happen with its Active Guard outdoor protection. High-tech cameras detect threats while they're still outside and alert real security agents. This is the game changer. The agent takes action while the intruder is outside, which is where you want them. That's the sweet spot. They confront the intruder, letting them know they're being watched on camera and the police are on the way, and even sounding a loud siren and triggering a spotlight if needed. It's like, oh my. In LA, it's like, finally, my moment. This is how you stop crime before it starts. I would say a crime has probably already started in a sense.
Mm.
Other systems have cameras that let you talk to intruders, but they require you to see the alert yourself. SimpliSafe's monitoring agents have your back and talk to intruders even if you aren't there. There's no long-term contracts or hidden fees. You can cancel anytime. Named best home security systems by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years running. 60-day money-back guarantee so you can try it and see the difference yourself. I've set up a SimpliSafe system. It's very easy to do. Works right out of the box. You can customize it for your home, and then the app is really reliable. The customer support, really reliable. I recommend it. Don't miss out on SimpliSafe's biggest sale of the year, 60% off right now. Our listeners can save 60% off a SimpliSafe home security system at simplisafe.com/crooked. That's simplisafe.com/crooked. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm Tommy Vietor.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
John Lovett could not be with us tonight. He is at the Andrew Cuomo party.
No, he's just at his house. He's staying there.
He's at Andrew Cuomo's house.
He's sleeping over.
In that next apartment. Big night for Democrats. Big night for America. But it's definitely a big night for Democrats. So this feels better, doesn't it?
Yeah. A little bit. What
do you guys forget what it feels to have a good election night that feels good? Did you guys forget about that?
Yes.
And to have an election night where all the good news came right away. There was no waiting. There was no waiting for the college towns to come in or anything like that. It's just polls close, call for the Democrats. That's how it should be.
Love it. Yeah.
One in Virginia, one in New Jersey, Prop 51 in California, one in New York City. Georgia Public Service Commission, big win there.
The main ballot measure that would have put voter suppression tactics in place and voter ID laws in place was losing really badly.
And the one about a red flag law to take guns away from family members who, I guess, might use them.
Don't forget the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Pennsylvania Supreme Court stays 5-2, yep. Liberal majority there. I think I'm probably forgetting a few, but it was big night.
What is this feeling, winning? This was like 2017. That's what it feels like, and 2018.
So let's start with, just because we just watched the speech, Zoran Mamdani, 34 years old, is the mayor of New York City. So far it is, I believe, he crossed the 50% threshold. Right now, with 90% reporting, it's Mamdani, 50.4%. Andrew Cuomo, 41.6%.
Wah, wah.
Gerda Sliwa, 7.1%. Mamdani won every borough except Staten Island. Won by 20 points in Brooklyn, 11 in the Bronx, over and over and over again. Hit 1 million votes. First time a candidate has done that in New York since 1969. He becomes the first Muslim mayor of New York, the first Democratic socialist, and the youngest mayor of New York since Tammany Hall days, I guess.
Pretty goddamn impressive.
Takes on Zoran pulling it out. Dan?
I mean, it's an incredible win. It's a campaign for the ages, right? They put out this incredible video just the other day that was Zoran standing on a street corner, I think in Queens, right after the 2024 election, holding a sign saying, please come talk to me about the election. And he was trying to, people would pay no, they had no idea who he was, pay no attention to him. Flash forward 1 year later, the guy's mayor of New York. He is a celebrity. Everywhere he's go, he's mobbed about people excited by this. There is like a sense of community in New York over this. People are just so fired up. It's like, it's truly, it really is one for the ages.
Tommy?
Yeah, just an extraordinary race. I mean, I got to talk to him for the first time 3 or 4 days ago, and he's just like effortlessly charming. He's relentlessly on message. He hammered costs. He hammered affordability. He was able to, and we'll talk about it in the speech, take a 2x4 to Andrew Cuomo's head in a pretty delicate way, I thought, most of the time.
Maybe it was an eloquent way. Yes.
Yeah. He did it with a smile. He did it with humor. And he, look, Barack Obama was good at this too. Like, landing a really hard punch in a way that doesn't feel mean or crass or cruel or what people hate about politics. He was focused on cost of living. He picked the right enemy, the kind of Bill Ackman billionaire class, and he ran with it. And my God, what a win.
Let's hear a clip from the speech.
Wish Andrew Cuomo only the best in private life. We can respond to oligarchy and authoritarianism with the strength it fears, not the appeasement it craves. After all, if anyone can show a nation betrayed by Donald Trump how to defeat him, it is the city that gave rise to him. And if there is any way to terrify a despot, it is by dismantling the very conditions that allowed him to accumulate power. This is not only how we stop Trump, it's how we stop the next one. So, Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have 4 words for you. Turn the volume up.
I will say, clip cut off the most important part of the Andrew Cuomo line, which was, I wish Andrew Cuomo the best in private life, and let this be the last time I ever say his name.
But let tonight be the final time I utter his name.
You said Obama, like, could you imagine Obama being like, I wish Hillary Clinton the best, and let tonight be the last time I ever utter her name.
We all would have clapped. I should say, as we were walking in here, the CNN panel talking about the speech was pretty apoplectic.
Yeah.
Because they were expecting a more conciliatory, you know, unifying sounding speech, which I frankly, in this moment, is a touch saccharine. I mean, he went super hard at Trump. I wondered if there might be some sort of, you know, ultimately failing strategy to kind of mollify Trump a bit and maybe see if he would not punish New York City. But no, I mean, Zoran took the fight right to Trump. He basically called him a slumlord in another part of the speech. Zoran was like unabashedly himself throughout the speech. He talked about, he opened by name-checking Eugene Debs, who many listeners might not know is like a very, very famous socialist. He was proud of his identity. He's talking about New York being a nation of immigrants. He clearly hates Cuomo. He was not willing to let it go tonight.
He also ended by saying a famous New Yorker once said, you campaign in poetry and govern in prose, which was Mario Cuomo.
Yeah, going after his father's most famous speech.
And then did The Shining City on the Hill, which is another Cuomo reference.
Yeah. Like, my biggest anxiety for Mamdani, for his team, for all the young people who have like poured themselves into this campaign and all their hopes and dreams is just the reality of how brutal and hard governing can be and how demoralizing it can feel when there are setbacks. And I wondered if Mamdani might do some kind of expectation setting tonight. He did not do that. He leaned into the high expectations. He said expectations will be high. We will meet them. So, I mean, look, like, good for him. He's owning the moment.
He's calling a shot. Dan?
Yeah, I think he clearly, hatred that he and his campaign team have for Andrew Cuomo is palpable. And I understand that because I also hate Andrew Cuomo with the passion of a thousand suns. So I get it. And I sympathize with
it. We've been there
in
our campaigns for other parts, but also with Andrew Cuomo. Yeah.
Yes. And it also, the Cuomo thing works in the sense that Andrew Cuomo represents everything that Mondani was running against, like old, broken, corrupt politics. So he, like, it's, yes, there is like a personal hatred there, but it also works with this narrative. I'm not apoplectic like the CNN panel. I think the key for his success is going to not be in fights with Trump. It's going to be, not that Trump is not going to bring the fight to him, but it is to just like cost of living, affordability crisis. Like, he's run this whole campaign. And I think he'll do the expectation setting in his inaugural speech on January 1st when he takes office. But like, he is a powerful, powerful speaker. And the thing that I really took from it is, like, Trump has his vision, this 1970s vision of New York, right? Crime ridden, the racial makeup at the time. And Mondani is completely in tune with the New York of today, the way he was like naming Yemeni bodega owners. And it's just like, he was name checking everyone, but that's the New York that he comes from. The New York he represents is this like amazing melting pot city of immigrants.
I will say the one part I did, like, I thought being tough on Trump was completely warranted because Donald Trump is at fucking war with American cities right now. And he's like, he spent the entire campaign threatening, he's still threatening to pull federal funding from New York. So he wants to hurt the people of New York because of who they voted for. He's got goons in Chicago and LA and everywhere. Like, he can be tough on Donald Trump. And I actually think showing a little strength is good. I mean, this is, again, Donald Trump is not a normal president from another party here. So I was actually okay with that. And,
yeah,
you know, you're pissed at Cuomo. You get a few digs in. It's fine.
I wasn't, like, opposed to it or, like, it didn't bother me. I was just a little surprised by it.
Me too.
You know, you could imagine a meeting where you're like, look, let's not pick this fight right now. Let's wait. You're a young guy. He's going to come after you anyway. But he was like, no, like he's going to punch me. So I'm going to punch him first.
Well, and you know what Trump respects? Trump respects people who are fucking throw a punch. Tough.
Yeah. That's the argument for it is he is sending a message to Trump that he'll fight him. Just, I was struck by, there's a way to do it where it's mostly about protecting New York. And he really went at like, despot, authoritarian, like the root causes of MAGAism. But you know, and also he's going to be a leader in this party, and maybe that's the, you know, the ground he's staking out. So we'll like sort of have to see where it goes.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Dan, because I thought he was going to go more in the direction where he did on when he talked about immigrants, and he said, you know, this is a city of immigrants. Now it's being led by one, and if you're going to come after us, you're going to have to go through all of us. Like I thought that's sort of the this is how we're going to take on Trump. It's like it's not Mamdani versus Trump. It's you're coming after the city. You're not just coming after me, which I think is the right.
Yeah, somewhere an ICE official is like, okay,
yeah,
give me a challenge.
It's going to be.
Dan, to your point about name checking the modern New York, do you see Deezus Nice tweeted, if Zoran is yet to mention your nationality, neighborhood, or bus line in the speech, please stay in line.
One just factoid on this race that I found the exit polls was fascinating is that Mamdani won 9% of 2024 Trump voters.
Amazing.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a huge number. Yeah.
Are we trusting any of the exit polls, Dan, for any of these? Because the top lines on both Virginia and Jersey, because people were doing the math where if you know the gender split, you can sort of figure out the top line, were so wrong.
Well, that's first wave, right? And the numbers adjusted several times.
I'm wondering if they have adjusted.
They have adjusted. And I think, like, is it super precise? No. Like, they never are. But it's like a piece of data, and maybe it's 9, maybe it's 7, but it's still like the idea that that there are a bunch of people, and this is an important thing for Democrats to understand, there are a bunch of people in New York City who pulled the lever for Donald Trump 1 year ago, who then pulled it for the 34-year-old immigrant Democratic Socialist mayor. And I think it says something about his appeal, and it says something about how sort of confusing voters can be.
Before we leave New York, lessons from the Mamdani campaign and Mamdani's victory, can they be applied to anywhere else in the country? Are we now a socialist country? And also, Republicans are trying very hard already to make Zoran Mamdani the face of the Democratic Party. They've already telegraphed that they're going to, you know, tie him to every Democratic candidate all across the country. Is this going to work? What do you think, Dan?
I do not think it's going to work. You know, every election they pick a bogeyman, right? It was Nancy Pelosi forever. And then in, you know, 2014, they put Nancy Pelosi in all the ads. Republicans did great. In 2018, they put Nancy Pelosi in all the ads and Republicans did poorly. Nancy Pelosi was less popular in 2018 than she was in 2014. So just the idea that they're really going to be able to use Mamdani to help like attack candidates in, you know, Georgia, or like, it just seems kind of far-fetched to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I agree. They always have a boogeyman. It's Pelosi. It's AOC. It's Ilhan Omar. It's whomever. Hillary Clinton. If it's not one, they'll pick another.
Yeah. How do you? Any lessons? Any lessons from the campaign?
I think it's good to not run candidates in their 80s. That's one note I had. I wrote that one down.
All three big races, young candidates.
Yep.
Sheryl, Spanberger, Mamdani.
Yep. I just like jokes aside, like. You're already seeing the wars breaking out on Twitter. You've got abundance bros fighting anti-oligarch cranks. You've got neo-lib shills battling the DSA.
Oh, everyone just so chill exhausting.
Out. Everyone
it's
just so chill exhausting. Out for a minute. Like I don't have a big. I don't know. I'd like to hear what you guys think. I've not had a big takeaway from this election night. Like some people say, the party needs to go left. Some people say we need more moderates, like Sheryl and Spanberger. I think all of them were boosted by the fact that Trump has totally failed to focus on the economy. In Virginia in particular, he fired a bunch of people who voted in the election. Running when Trump is on the ballot is really, really hard. Democrats tend to get a decent boost running against Trump when he's not on the ballot, and that benefited everybody here. It really is good to pick young candidates who understand the digital age and who can communicate and connect, who are good messengers and good speakers. But also, Mamdani picked the right message, which was affordability and battling the billionaire class as the problem, and he hammered it on corruption and the cost of living. And like that discipline, I do think, is a lesson that can be applied to like every election.
Yeah, I mean, what is the lesson from an election where a Muslim socialist won in New York and an ex-CIA moderate mom trounced in Virginia, and another woman with a military background, Navy pilot, trounced in New Jersey? The common denominator is Donald Trump hasn't done anything about affordability and has made it worse.
Yep.
So that is the one common denominator in all the races, no matter what part of the party you're from, no matter what you believe, who you are, your identity. It has all been it's been about Donald Trump and his failure to do anything about costs. Pod Save America is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. What if you could consistently find whatever it is you're looking for right away? We're talking everything from parking spots to holiday gifts to jackets or jeans that fit perfectly. Imagine how much time you'd save. While you may never instantly find these things, if you're hiring, you can find qualified candidates right away, time and time again, with ZipRecruiter.
Some people say that the hardest thing to find is yourself, John.
And happiness.
Wherever you go, there you are.
And today you can try it for free. Not happiness, but ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology works fast to find top talent. With ZipRecruiter's advanced resume database, you can unlock top candidates' contact info instantly. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2. We love ZipRecruiter. We've used it here at Crooked. We've had a lot of resumes, and you have to sort through them. It's a real pain in the ass. ZipRecruiter helps you do it. It's great technology. Makes your life easier. Want to know right away how many qualified candidates are in your area? Look no further than ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/crooked. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Hims. Confidence shouldn't be complicated. Through Hims, you can skip the guesswork and get access to care that actually fits your lifestyle, straightforward, stress-free, and designed around you. Through Hims, you can access personalized prescription treatment options for ED, like hard mints and Sex RX. Plus what? Climax control. If prescribed, Hims offers access to ED treatment options ranging from trusted generics that cost 95% less than brand names to hard mints. If prescribed, you shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Feeling like yourself, confidence. These are, I feel, euphemisms for having an erection, John. And there are plenty of people who probably don't feel like themselves and have no confidence, but are able to get
erections.
But there are people that need help to do it. And I don't think we should be bashful about that. That's okay to talk about. I think it's fine. The point is, this isn't one size fits all care that forgets you in the waiting room. It's your health and goals put first with real medical providers, making sure you get what you need to get results.
And those results are
erections. Think of Hims as your digital front door that gets you back to that back door with 100% online access to trusted treatments for ED and more, all in one place. It's not a one size fits all approach, John.
There it is.
Because it isn't. To get simple online access to personalized affordable care for ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/crooked. That's hims.com/crooked for your free online visit. hims.com/crooked. Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescriptions required. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, Virginia. Abigail Spanberger will be the first female governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. She won, so far I got 57. She's at 57%.
God, that's an ass-kicking.
57, 42.7 over Winsome Earl Sears. Jay Jones wins the attorney general race by a smaller margin, but The margin is 52%, and his opponent was 47.5%. Democrat Ghazala Hashmi is the new lieutenant governor. She won 55-45. Every single, just about every county, I think, but four in Virginia shifted blue, some by double digits since 2024. You have counties like Chesterfield County, Yunkin won by 5. Spanberger is winning by 17. That is like an unheard of swing.
Crazy.
Virginia Beach, another sort of bellwether county. Yunkin won by 8, Spanberger by 10. Just huge, huge shifts. So I was not worried about Virginia. I thought she was going to win by at least Kamala's margin, if maybe a few points more. This was way bigger than that. What did you guys think of Virginia, Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, this was a remarkable drubbing by Spanberger. And also, Democrats are on track to win 64 Virginia House of Delegates seats out of 100 total. That's a pickup of, I think, 13.
13.
Which is just massive. That is massive. And it suggests that it wasn't just top of the ticket. There was anger at the Republican Party all the way down. Like, I like you, I think Spanberger is a pretty good candidate. She was running against a terrible opponent. Republicans all but gave up on this race. Although I do think the RGA burned like $4 million for no reason at the very end on ads, which is thank you, I guess, for lighting that money on fire.
Yeah.
But, you know, with all these races, there was chatter in the summer sort of doldrum months that maybe things weren't going well, that maybe something secret was showing up in the polls and Republicans were closing. And so you know, that creeps into your brain, but no, it was a drubbing.
Dan?
Yeah. Like she obviously, I was pretty sure she was going to win the whole time. I mean, the party opposite the president has won every Virginia governor's race since 1975, other than 2013 when the Republicans nominated Ken Cuccinelli, the worst candidate humanly possible. But this was a massive, massive win. And I think this is largely about Donald Trump and specifically about Donald Trump's attack on the federal government, like using the exit polls again. 60% of Virginians said that they were adversely affected by the cuts to federal spending or federal jobs.
Wow.
And Spanberger won those voters by 37%.
Thank you, Donald
Trump. A fifth of Virginia voters say that someone in their household either worked for was a federal government employee or a federal government contractor. Spanberger won those voters by more than 20 points. It was just an absolute, like if the shutdown was going to be a problem for Democrats, it was going to be in Virginia. This would be the place. This is ground zero for the shutdown. And the fact that the Democrats did so well, so far outran margins, crushed with moderates, right? And then just a massive shift in the suburbs from Glenn Youngkin's victory in 21 to Spanberger's victory now. Like, did you in the exit polling, they do it by region, right? So in suburb, people who live in the suburbs, Youngkin won by 7 points. Spanberger's going to win by about 15 points. Like, huge, huge wins. And this is once a place where Donald Trump is 15 points underwater in this state. And he's more unpopular in Virginia than he is in New Jersey. And that clearly played a role here. And the fact that Spanberger did so well that she pulled Jay Jones across the finish line, who everyone thought was going to lose, was, you know, basically left for dead by the Democratic Party because of the texting scandal. And he ends up winning pretty handily.
I know.
What texting scandal? I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just kidding.
He was in one of those group chats.
Yeah. We don't do that in our party. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I feel like this is a bigger win than 17. This is the biggest Democratic win in Virginia of our lifetimes, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's the biggest margin by far. I think 17 was 10 points, maybe.
10 yeah. Points. This was wild. And to have the whole to bring
it's
in the biggest, assembly too.
The biggest it's the biggest Democratic win. And we lost really, really bad in 2009 by like 20 points, I think, or 17 points.
Oh yeah.
Cray deeds.
And so again, now the lesson to take from here across the country is run moderate former CIA
people. It's the only option.
No,
yes.
It's the same. That's it. That is another lesson.
It has to be binary. It's got to be one or the other. It's not about running the right candidate for the district you're in. That's ridiculous.
Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey over Jack Cittarelli, 56-43. Now, this is maybe the margin here, I think, at least for me, of the big races was the biggest surprise of the night.
100%.
Because, you know, a lot of the polls had this down to a 1 point lead, 2 point lead, 3 point lead. There were some other, there was some variation. There were some that were like 7 or 8, but no one had it this.
No, I looked today, the RCP average, the Real Clear Politics average was 3.3 at the end. And to your point, like there were a couple polls late that were like Sherrill +1, Sherrill +2, +3, +1. Like it seemed like it was tightening up. And this is the one.
Your day has passed, Atlas Intel.
Yeah, they officially lost their A-plus rating tonight.
Fuck you.
Oh, that's a polling firm for all you non-sickos out there. I'm really excited to never have to learn how to say Chitterelli properly.
You
did it correctly.
Well,
I know, but
I heard John say it.
Well, that's because I said it wrong a couple times.
Oh, you did?
Not tonight, but in the past.
Okay. Cheater.
So this is an interesting one, right? Like, Phil Murphy, you've got an incumbent who's already served two terms, so it's sort of hard for another Democrat to win after a Democrat's already served two terms. Chitterelli is someone who's run before, so he has, like, near universal name recognition in the state. He was seen as a, like, Winsome Sears, not seen as a great candidate, but Jack Chitterelli, not a bad candidate for Republicans. Was not like a super Trumpy Republican in the primary, pretended he was a super Trumpy Republican, and then basically forgot that Trump existed in the general. I think you had to you look on his website, and he had all the list of people who endorse him at the very bottom in like small letters. It says Donald Trump, but that's like the only time he ever mentioned
him.
Unfortunately for Jack Chitterelli, he said Trump supported him on video, and then it was put in ads for months.
Oh yeah, well you go.
And he also proposed a 10% sales tax at one point, which is a bad move when cost of living.
Oh, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. What do you think, Dan? What happened? Why was the polling so off in this one?
I don't know why the polling was so off. I don't know that the polling was off in 21 too in New Jersey, because that one ended up being much closer than we thought. So maybe we don't know how to poll New Jersey. Like, I don't even think they did exit polls in 21 because we were so sure the race was going to be such an easy win for Murphy. So it was hard to even do an apples to apples comparison of how things might have changed. It's a truly, like, this is even more of a stunning win than Abigail Spanberger's win because of the point you made, which is every election is a chance election. And it's so hard for a third Democratic term to replace a two-term Democratic governor and then to win by almost as much as that governor won the first time. I think Murphy won by 17 points in 17. But to win by such a huge margin, usually it's a begrudging thing, even in a Democratic state. I think the other takeaway is if New Jersey shifted very far to the right from 2020 to 2024, a 10-point swing in Trump's direction, Trump made huge gains in the counties outside of New York City, like Bergen and Passaic and Hudson. And as of the vote count I just looked at, like, Sherrill is crushing in those counties now. And I think that, like, this doesn't tell us that New Jersey hasn't moved some to the right, but if this is a warning sign that it may be a fleeting moment for Trump to have the strength there. It may look more like Obama in Indiana in 2008 than Obama in Virginia in 2008, in the sense that it's a fleeting moment as opposed to a state on its path to purple status.
Ron Brownstein was tweeting. He was looking through the exits and some of the
I literally
data.
Have that highlighted on this. Really? That's so funny that you're going to do that. Yes.
He said, no group received more attention as evidence of realignment in 24 than working class minorities, but Spanberger won 84% of non-whites without a college degree, and Sherrill won 71% of them. And that number is probably going to be adjusted up. In each case, that's better than Kamala Harris in 2024.
Oh, I was going to say,
Ron had a few of them, so who knows?
Ron also pointed out that in New Jersey, the Republican, Sherrill didn't get back to the Democratic share with Hispanic voters that we reached in 17 or the 2020 presidential race. But Chitterelli did not come close to Trump's 2024 Hispanic number of 43%. He only got 34%, which suggests that Trump, like, having permanently changed the baseline for Hispanic voters, that assumption is probably not proven out yet.
Yeah, and I think don't want to step on any of Dan's meta takes at the end, but in all of these races, it does seem like the voting groups that shifted the most towards Trump in 24, young voters, some black men, Latino voters, and then in some of the polling we've seen in the last couple of months, those have been the voters who are now disapproving of Trump. And I think this election has shown that, like, they actually did flip back to Democrats in a lot of these races.
Or they flipped to the couch, which is the more likely thing here.
Or they flipped to the couch,
which is just that, like, this
like
is
JD we have Vance.
Yes, exactly. No? JD Vance.
Too late for that.
never too late. It's just, this is such a smaller electorate with more highly engaged voters. So it's not necessarily that a bunch of these people, there will be some who voted Trump in 24 who voted for Sherrill or Spanberger in 25, but the most more likely scenario is people who came out for Trump in 24 stayed home. Now that is a sign of political weakness for Trump because he has not been able to turn these people into regular Republican voters, and he's not going to be on the ballot.
Never be on the ballot again. Will they stay on the? Will they come off the couch for J.D. Vance, Tommy?
Phrasing.
Yes. Come off the couch.
I don't know. It's
or,
late.
Or
it's late. It's 9:15. My kids had me up before 4.
It's okay. We have a 7 a.m. flight tomorrow. Great. Anything else in New Jersey? No?
Great state.
Great.
Close to New York. Easy to commute to the city.
Good, good. That's the kind of analysis people come for. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. As seasons change and days grow darker sooner, it can be a tough time for many. This November, BetterHelp is encouraging everyone to reach out, check in on friends, reconnect with loved ones, and remind the people in your life that you're there. Just as it can take a little courage to send that message or grab coffee with someone you haven't seen in a while, reaching out for therapy can feel difficult too, but it's worth it. And it almost always leaves people wondering, why didn't I do this sooner? BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally, and it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. This month, don't wait to reach out, whether you're checking in on a friend or reaching out to a therapist yourself. BetterHelp makes it easier to take that first step. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/PSA. That's betterhelp.com/PSA. Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out. Pennsylvania, we retained 3 state Supreme Court justices, so we got the 5-2 majority. We mentioned that.
It's a big deal.
Should we talk about the biggest, honestly, probably the most impressive electoral performance of the whole night are these two candidates that won, that flipped Republican seats in the Georgia Public Service Commission, because they were statewide
race.
And not only did they just win, knocked off these Republicans, the margin here is 61-38 in one of them and 62-38 in the other. I mean, wow.
And don't take our word for it. We're going to drop in right here Steve Bannon talking about this race on the War Room podcast tonight.
The midterms start tonight. One of the biggest warning signs that we've got that we need to get focused is these two commissioners in Georgia, the MTG mentioned. First time in 30 years that Democrats have won a statewide election. I don't think they've ever had commissioners have been Democrats in a couple of decades. That is a warning that this thing is going to cut deeper.
So, yeah, like Bannon, like legitimately, I think was shaken up by this Georgia result. And like for those wondering, like what are you guys talking about? This is a state agency that regulates utilities and makes sure that like electricity, natural gas, and telecommunications are provided safely and at reasonable rates. But it became a proxy for this broader political battle we're all waging this evening.
And you know why people who are listening to us may be more aware of this race than some other folks, because one organization that was laser focused on this race Vote Save America.
Damn right.
And
great work to that team.
And they would tell us, hey, could you, in the pod, talk about the Georgia Public Service Commission? And we'd be like, what? And they were right. glad we focused on that. Yeah. You got to be feeling good if you're John Ossoff trying to defend a seat in Georgia. Again, obviously, very different electorate, midterm to off year. But I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
I think it's very positive, right? Like, this is, it's just, if there was lingering positive effects for Donald Trump after 2024, then you would, these would have shown up in some way, shape, or form. And the exact opposite happened, right? This is it's a full rebuke. And if the fact that it's even showing up in Georgia, like Virginia, that's a Democratic state. New Jersey, that's a Democratic state. California gets you a Democratic state. Maine, Democratic state. Georgia, purple as can be. Trump won it last time. And the fact that Democrats were able to win there, that Steve Bannon's right to be worried.
When Ossoff was in here, he said that he thinks his race is going to be like a $500 million election, the Georgia Senate race. Also, way taller than I thought.
Very tall.
Very tall.
Very tall.
Goddamn good looking, too.
Handsome.
Really handsome.
Handsome and tall? Looks, that seems unfair.
Handsome and tall. If he were blonde, he would look like a DHS or ICE recruiting poster. He's got that kind of like 50s throwback handsomeness. You know
Strong
what I mean?
Strong jaw.
These guys get
it. Like, no, you're glad he's not blonde, right? You're like, don't step into my territory
Stay
here.
That's right. Get away from my culture. My culture is not your costume.
My culture is ICE's costume. says Thomas Frederick Vitor. Should we come back here to California? Prop 50.
Gavin.
Wins. Crushes.
Yeah. Great work.
We got 65% of the votes in. It is 64-35 right now.
That's awesome.
That's a lot of votes to count already. I'm surprised. Usually we don't count votes that fast.
No, we count them early.
We do. Oh,
they come
right.
in early. Yeah. We count them early. Yeah.
That's right. And then we have to wait. And then
it's the harvesting.
Starts. Then you harvest them early tomorrow morning. Yeah. Right.
That's well, if you, when you rig, then it makes it easy to count.
Right. Anyway, big win for the Democratic Party in being able to neutralize the gerrymandering that Texas did. So they took five. Now we'll take five. They're still trying to take more, so won't completely neutralize the gerrymandering that they're trying to do. But it is very good news for Democrats taking the House in the midterms of 2026. It at least gives us more of a fighting chance. And also, big win for Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
This was a risk. He took a bet.
I think this is a really big deal. I mean, obviously, once he put forward the idea and said it was going to be on there was going to be a ballot initiative, it seemed very likely, given that this is the state of California, given the makeup of off-year voters in a special election like that, are primarily like
the Libyous Libs.
Yeah, there's like the Pod Save America election. Like, odds are we were going to win it. But he had the guts and the foresight to conceive of this idea, push it forward, and get this thing done. And like, imagine if we were sitting here tonight, like, knowing we were going into the 2026 midterms at a deficit of five seats because of Texas. Like, this is a huge deal.
I believe he spoke about the idea for the first time right here.
Yeah.
Right here at this table.
Yeah, and then I think we scooped his own podcast by accident because we put out the clip early.
Told us, he's like, well, we can either try to do something with the legislature. He's like, but also I think we might just be able to put it on the ballot.
Yeah.
Like, wow, what an idea.
Cool. Do it.
Here it is. Here we are. Things happen.
Did you vote for Prop 50, Dan? Were you for or against?
Did I?
Yeah, me too.
It's good. Me too. Let's do meta takes. Any other races that we should talk about? We talked about those two main the main ballot measures. There's a red flag gun control. We call it
sure.
It's a red flag gun measure, gun safety measure has passed, and then Tommy, you noted that a voter ID measure failed.
John, wasn't there a big race in your wife's hometown?
Oh yeah, AFTAB. Yeah. Mayor Aftab Perival had a challenge from J.D. Vance's half-brother.
Kicked his ass.
The love seat.
50 points.
Crushed him. Absolutely crushed him.
Good job, Aftab. Great mayor, great person. Glad Cincinnati has him for another term. I think that's it. Any meta takes? Should we do meta takes?
What do you got, Dan?
Yeah, unspool your meta take.
I'll give you
give it,
my meta.
Give it
my
to us first before you put it in the message box.
Yeah.
What time are you posting this?
Now.
Oh, yeah.
It's live.
Oh, hold on, I need a second. Gotta hit send. I think the biggest one is that this is a massive rebuke of Trump. Right? He's underwater in all these states. In both Virginia and New Jersey, two-thirds of voters were dissatisfied with the direction of the country. the economy was the number one issue for most voters. In both states, the Democrats won those voters by 20 points. The Democrats won with moderates. They won with independents. They held their margins with young people in the core parts of the Democratic coalition. Donald Trump is unpopular. His political operation made things, couldn't get out of their own way, made things harder for Republicans in Virginia and New Jersey. Just like, it's very clear in the results. Like, I think Abigail Spanberger would have won shutdown, no shutdown, Doge, no Doge. But what he did to the federal workforce and federal government sunk that race, made the political situation so much worse. And then he's got his fucking Grim Reaper Russ vote, like just canceling infrastructure projects for New Jersey in the months and weeks leading up to the election. And so it's a huge rebuke for him. Like, it is, there are a whole slew of polls came out over the weekend. All of them had Trump at his lowest approval rating in a very long time. People are pissed about the economy. They're pissed at him. Democrats are still fired up. Even if they don't like the brand or our leaders, they're still showing up to vote for Democrats. Most of the polling shows that people who voted for Spanberg and Sherrill did it to vote for them, not to oppose Trump or someone else. And so even when so meditate number one, very bad for Trump. Meditate number two, that at least in this off-year election environment, the base of our party, our true most loyal voters, remain incredibly fired up and ready to go vote for Democrats, even if they are dissatisfied with large parts of the party leadership.
Fired up and ready to go.
Ready to go vote. That's pretty good.
Dan,
counterpoint, a political analyst I follow on Truth Social posted, Trump wasn't on the ballot and shutdown were the two reasons that Republicans lost elections tonight, comma, according to pollsters. That was from Donald Trump.
Alan Lickman?
Yeah, that's one of the keys.
I have another new pundit. He just he was tied up for a bit, and now he's out and about again. Mr. George Santos.
Yes, what's he saying?
Fuck you, Curtis Sliwa. I hate you, your dumb wife, that stupid beret of yours, and all your fucking cats. That's a tweet we just got from George Santos.
That's good.
One more question. Federal government has now been shut down for 36 days. That is the longest shutdown in American history. Donald Trump seemed to, well, it didn't seem to, he did, in his Truth Social post was basically like, it was the shutdown that hurt us. Do we think now's a good time for Democrats to cave the shutdown?
I mean, Dan, could you imagine?
What's going on there? I have not paid. I see people are looking for an off-ramp, and then I saw a lot of other Senate Democrats go on the record to CNN and be like, this would be fucking crazy to do this now. So I don't know what's real, what sources, and what's not.
I read Punchbowl, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
And so what the folks at Punchbowl are telling me is there's upwards of a dozen Senate Democrats who are talking to Republicans or interested in some sort of off-ramp, which would include kind of what Thune's been proposing, which is open the government in exchange for a vote on the Obamacare subsidies. Republicans had a caucus meeting today. The Republican senators also want to vote on the Obamacare subsidies. I'm not saying they're going to vote for it, but they at least want to be able to put up a Republican bill so they're not just voting against a Democratic bill. So there's some interest there. People seem to be very quickly moving to the exits on this.
I keep asking this question, but like, what's going on with the House? You can't have a fucking vote in the Senate on this and then just not have any kind of deal happen in the House. Otherwise,
yeah,
it's
a flaw in the plan. There's also a lot in there, which is really the motivating factor here, is the appropriators really want to appropriate. And their part of this deal would be to get the appropriations process working again. And they'd pass three minibuses. I don't even want to get into what that is, but appropriators are excited about it.
But like, I get the substantive reasons that everyone wants to end the shutdown. We want people to get SNAP benefits. We want TSA to work. We don't want any more planes to crash. I saw that
Sean Duffy said he was going to shut down a lot of our airspace next week if the government doesn't reopen.
Jesus don't love Christ. That.
Yeah,
don't
that,
love
so that. That's all not ideal. But if you wake up tomorrow and you're Hakeem Jeffries or you're Chuck Schumer and you're meeting with your leadership or you're having a caucus meeting, like, what in the data suggests that what you've been doing for the last month has been the wrong approach?
Telling there's a lot of ways to choreograph this so that Republicans can still say, you know, we didn't let them hold us hostage on something while the government was shut down, right? Like, there's a way to do it so if you don't get the vote you want, then the government shuts down again because you only pass a funding bill that goes that far. So, like, that's fine if they want to choreograph it, but, like, the House has to be involved here, and we have to, like, know that Trump's going to sign a bill that includes ACA subsidies as well. So, like, if we're not having meetings where it's a deal between Trump and Schumer and Thune and Johnson and Jeffries, then, like, what the fuck are we doing?
Well, John, Trump is having breakfast with the Senate Republicans tomorrow, and he's going to tell invoke the nuclear option, eliminate the filibuster, and then open the government, but then pass a whole series of voter suppression methods. He also truthed about that tonight. That's what he wants them to do.
That's another. It's like
ban mail-in voting, do all these other things.
This is why they don't want to. This is why one of the reasons they don't want to follow his advice and eliminate the filibuster is they don't have the votes to do all that crazy shit. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are not going to do that. They're not going to probably get. I guess they can get the Tillis. I think
they can. They could get.
They don't have the votes for those people to even get rid of the. They probably don't have the votes to get rid of the filibuster.
That they don't, and they don't want to get rid of the filibuster because then they have to do all Trump's crazy shit. Right now, he calls him and says, "Do this insane thing," and they're like, "Well, we can't. The Democrats won't let us." But once they hit,
but now he's 50, learned. He's like, "Wait a minute. This is what's stopping me from doing all the crazy shit." That's
5 years in. He's figured it out.
He did have some new spin on his election night defeat. He tweeted out or chart-truthed out, just out, the 60 Minutes interview of Donald J. Trump on CBS Sunday night was the highest rated 60 Minutes in years. That is some cope. That is some cope that is right alongside when every election the Republicans lose, someone tweets a photo of a map of a state or the country, and it's like, if not for all these cities, Democrats would never win. It's like, yes, if not for all the human beings, the citizens who live in those cities who vote for Democrats, we would never win. You are correct. Counties don't vote.
Here's a Democratic senator who's not backing down. Chris Murphy just put out a statement about the shutdown. Democrats win when we show the American people what we stand for and how we're willing to fight for it, as we have been for the last month. Tonight's election results are an unmistakable rejection of Donald Trump's corruption and Republicans' billionaire agenda, but the results should also give Democrats confidence that the American people have our back as we engage in the fight to protect people's health care and save our democracy. Good for Chris Murphy.
Get him, Murph dog.
Meanwhile, fucking Chuck Schumer can't even tell us who he voted for in New York.
Let's talk about that
for
a second.
Pretty galling.
It's just it's bad politics.
Yeah.
If you didn't vote for him and like you know that everyone's going to be pissed at you, just fucking grow a pair and say you didn't vote for him.
This is
just
Chuck Schumer.
Say it one way or the other.
This has been Chuck.
Cowardly.
This is why I think Chuck Schumer's greatest flaw as a leader. He's just afraid to tell people what they don't want to hear. And like, what is his thinking here? That the Republicans would be like, man, we were going to run all these ads comparing John Ossoff to Mamdani, but Schumer never voted for him. So I guess that's off the table.
Yes, we can't do it.
Would be unfair.
He foiled our plans.
Well, the Schumer approach is only just a little bit worse than Hakeem Jeffries, who just took on water from the left for like a month or 2 months.
Yeah, he took the Band-Aid off painfully slowly, but he did take it off.
You took it off, and I give him credit for that, but it's like politics. Like, what did you – how did that benefit you? You got the left mad at you, and all the attacks you were worried about can still come.
Yeah, I'm like – I'm almost more offended as like a practitioner of politics.
Yeah.
It's like, endorse
him
or don't.
I would have been annoyed if you said I'm not voting for him.
Right.
For sure, but like this was the worst of all options. Also, does Chuck Schumer think he's going to take this secret to his grave? Like, he's going to face reporters and they're just going to people are going to keep asking who you voted for.
It's going to be so annoying.
Secret ballot. Oh, he's never going to come on Pod Save America. It's the only thing we're going to ask.
He's not invited.
We didn't invite you. Who would you vote for, Chuck? Tell us. Come on. Was it Sliwa?
He shows up at the studio and there's just in his chair is a new piece of crooked merch that says closeted homosexual waiting for him.
Remember when people were rocking homosexual shirts? Like, in real life.
A lot of people's 2020 tweets did not age well, I would say that.
Well, let us never say his name again.
let's never.
That's actually,
In the words of the next mayor of New York City.
Let us defile the words of his father.
Great night. Great night, everyone. We're still alive. We're still kicking. Democracy is not dead yet. So everyone should feel good about that. Thank you to everyone who volunteered in this election, who got out there and voted, who talked to your friends about it. It really mattered. And we'll see you guys in D.C.
See you at CricketCon.
See you at CricketCon.
What a time to all get together in person.
So I'm so excited.
Better than the alternative. Having gotten long crushed.
See you guys soon.
Bye, everyone.
If you want to listen to Pod Save America ad-free and get access to exclusive podcasts, go to cricket.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. Also, please consider leaving us a review. That helps boost this episode and everything we do here at Crooked. Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. Our producers are David Toledo, Emma Illick-Frank, and Saul Rubin. Our associate producer is Farah Safari. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive editor. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Naomi Sengel is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Ben Hefcoat, Mia Kelman, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, and Ryan Young. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East. Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.